everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's all the same thing. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as some video interviews with, well, some of the biggest and best best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. We've got a new issue out right now featuring my conversation with Sheila Roberts, the romance writer Sheila Roberts, very interesting woman. Had a great conversation with her at the Writers' Conference just a couple weeks ago. So check it out at authormagazine.org. And as always, we're funded by the wonderful Pacific Northwest Writers Association, which has been supporting writers from Pen to Publication since 1955. If you want to join the PNWA and you live in the Northwest, I highly encourage. In fact, even if you don't live in the Northwest, the PNWA holds monthly meetings where writers, sometimes like me, come and give talks about the business, the craft, the life of a writer. And even if you aren't in the Northwest and can't make it to one of those meetings, you can log on and listen to them for free through the internet. So it doesn't matter where you are, if you are interested in writing, the PNWA can support you and what you do. Learn about that and go to PNWA.org. So here we are, another Fearless Writing Masterclass, boys and girls. I do love to do these. I took a break from it last week to have a wonderful conversation with Stephen Metcalf. If you missed that, check it out in the archives here on Blog Talk Radio or on iTunes. We talked about writing and parenting, having kids on the spectrum, that sort of thing. It's a great conversation. But now we're back to Fearless Writing. I should say before we continue that if you like the conversations we have here, if you're interested in the perspectives that we bring to writing through Fearless Writing Masterclasses, you can learn more about it by going to my website, williamknauer.com. You can click on the big old Fearless Writing link, and that there you'll find information. If you want to work with me one-on-one, if you want me to talk to your group, if you want me to come talk to your little writer's group or to a big writing organization at a conference, all the information is there. There's also a link to order a book, Write Within Yourself, an Author's Companion. That is my little devotional, something, 75 little essays and stories connect you to why you write, help connect you to that part of that place within you that knows that you have something valuable to share simply because you're alive and you're a person. And as always, with me today on my Fearless Writing Masterclass, my friend, co-host, and fellow author, R.J. Jeffries, or as I call him, just Jeff. Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Bill. I'm very excited about another series show in these incredible Fearless Writing series, looking to learn, looking to hear some great questions answered. And once again, thank you so much for the opportunity to join you with these. They're fascinating.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I couldn't do it without you, Jeff. I couldn't do it without you. What's on your mind right now? What's on your writer's mind these days? If you're like me, Jeff, it's something new is always coming up about this writing creative process. It's such a big animal, writing creativity. There's always something new that I'm interested in, something new I'm focused on. What are you focused on right now? What has got your interest?
Really, for me, it's putting together a compilation of my own poems to put out in the world in the fall, and working very, very intensely with my editor now, and realizing just the importance of it, how important it is to have someone who knows your voice almost as well and sometimes better than you do in those moments of question, and how working in tandem with them, when it's out in the world, you've really got something you can be satisfied with, comfortable with, and not residually worry about anymore. It's the best to do. You've gotten the best assistance and second pair of eyes to look it over and their feedback. So that's what I'm engaged in and very much involved with right now.
That's great. It's great. I love the perspective what you just mentioned there, you got to let it go. That it always reminds me in a way of children, which is that you raise them, you write these stories, these poems, these essays, and you care for them. They sort of come out of nothing. They come out of that creative womb of your imagination, and you bring them sort of to life. But then then, and perhaps you bring some other people in, like an editor, always a good idea, another pair of eyes, someone you create with, but then you've got to set it free, and you've got to let it have its own life. It's going to do what it's going to do, the essay, the poem, the book. It's going to do what it's going to do its own. It's going to be read by people, and they're going to have their own reaction to it. It's going to have it's going to have an effect on people's lives that you have really no control over, that you could never have predicted, just the way your children go out and make friendships that you could never have predicted. It's so much like that. You know, you offer this thing out into the world, and it does something you could never predict. And I'll tell you, Jeff, I think sometimes that's tough for writers. I think a part of us would like, maybe I'm the only one, but a part of us would like to control, or we think it's a good idea, or we believe we need to control the response people have to it. That people can't just like it, but they've got to like it in a certain way, and God forbid they should dislike it. I know I certainly have gone through that. I don't know if you have, but that the sort of vulnerability you feel when you set the thing loose, realizing that it's now really out of your hands. You know what I mean?
You have no control unless you want to be like Walt Whitman and write, you know, his Piece of Grass, which he wrote over a span, I think, of 42 years and kept republishing it. We don't really have that kind of, we don't have that luxury anymore. It's out there and we have to move on to the next thing.
And or you can be like Emily Dickinson and just not publish it at all. But people,
exactly.
But eventually it did get published
anyway.
Yeah,
wait for your sister to take care of that when you pass. Exactly.
Yeah. I think that sometimes we say we're afraid of rejection, but I think sometimes we're afraid of acceptance. I think sometimes the idea of it getting published is as scary to us in certain quiet ways as it being rejected, the work actually being published, actually being read, because it will quickly become clear that you have just zero control over what people think of that thing that you've spent so much time and you care about so much. You have to set it free. You have to set it free. So good for you. Setting it, good for you getting that work together. I'm glad you have an editor that you really trust and like. It's so important, and it's just awesome. That's awesome. So what have we got on tap for us today? Have we got some questions from our loyal listeners?
We have a great question, which I think is a nice segue to what we just talked about, from Uwe Posnansky. Once again, I must add this disclaimer. If I mispronounce your name, please forgive me.
Why not Jane Roberts
or
Bob Smith?
And her question is, when you seek input from, and once again, thank you all so much for sending these incredible questions. You know, leave it to a writer to write you a really good question that opens the door to some great answers from you. So her question is, when you seek input from readers and listeners and their opinions conflict with each other, how do you choose which advice to follow? That's a good question.
Yeah. You know, this is what I go through when I do workshopping in my writing classes. And, you know, sometimes there's disagreement in terms of and one thing to bear in mind, I think I might have told the story about it before, but I think this is a really useful way to look at the why we use criticism. I don't think we need it. I think a lot of us use it, but I think you can do perfectly well without feedback, but it requires a different kind of discipline. But as you know, the whole concept behind fearless writing, one of the fundamentals of it, is you can't care what other people think. That you really can't sit down and write thinking, I wonder what my critique group will think. I wonder what my editor will think. The actual writing process requires, in my experience and in the experience of every writer I've talked to about it intimately, when we've really talked about the intimate experience of writing, requires a complete cocoon of attention to what other people might think. So you have to put yourself into a place where you're only interested in the thing, in expressing the thing you're interested in. But then we have this experience of working with an editor or working with a critique group. And the metaphor I like to use is this. If you can picture, imagine yourself sitting in a room and you have to point across the room to a small lamp or a small piece of, a small picture amongst many pictures on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't touch the picture, but you're pointing at it. And your audience, the person you're talking to, is saying, where is that picture? And you point to it from across the room. They now have to follow your point and find the thing you're pointing at. because you, in this metaphor, can't touch it. Well, that's what writing is. Your job is to point at something, but you can't, in the reader, but you can't touch it. All you can hope is say, there it is, and they say, oh, I get it, I can see it. And what the critique process is a process of saying, I get it or I don't get it. Now, they might say a lot of different things. They might say, this is slow, this is boring, this needs, you know, a better beginning, or they might be more, they might be gentler and just say, I don't understand, or your lead character seems to be very upset about something, but I don't understand what she's upset about. But in the end, all a person can say is either I understand why you think this scene is so cool, or I don't understand why you think this scene is so cool. I understand why you think this is funny, or I don't see why this is so funny. They can't really correct it for you, but they can say what they understand and what they don't. And so as a writer, you have to ask yourself two questions. A, do I think I can make what I have to say clearer? So the person who says, I don't get what is so funny about this, can get what is funny about it. Could you be clearer? Could you point more directly? Because if seven people say, I don't get it, then maybe you haven't really, you know the thing you want to write about is within you. You can feel how cool it is, but maybe it's just not clear. Because writing is a translation. The thing you're writing is not does not come to you in the form of words. It probably comes in the form of thoughts and feelings and ideas. And so you're translating something that is in its sense wordless into words so that people who aren't you, who can't look into your brain, can somehow see or feel the thing that you saw and felt in your imagination and turned into words. And so it's perfectly understandable if they would say, I don't see what you claim you saw. I don't see it. You know, in fact, here, I'm going to take a little detour here. I have a friend who was kind of a visionary in a way in education. He had a vision for what schools could be back in the 1970s, before schools were really changing. He was way ahead of his time. And he could see it. He could literally just, he talked about being able, I wrote a blog about this for Huffington Post a couple weeks ago. And he literally could describe, he could picture in his head exactly what the schools could look like before they were built. They didn't exist physically, but he could see them. So he could he was a visionary. He could see what didn't exist in the real world. And he started building those schools. But the problem was there were people who couldn't see what he saw. And when it came to the time to explain to them why schools could be different and help them see what he could see, that was the part of the equation he didn't understand. And so they would say to him, you're wrong. I don't think your vision of schools is going to work. And because he didn't believe yet enough in the translation, he got frustrated with them and kind of gave up. And writers are like that too. Just because you have a vision inside your mind for the thing you want, the people either see it or they don't. And if they can't see it, you ask yourself, can I help them see it better? But sometimes, and every writer has to decide for themselves where the line is, you have to realize there are sometimes people are just not going to get the thing you're looking at. They're not going to get the joke if you're telling a joke. They're not going to understand why your character felt it was tragic that his girlfriend moved away. They're not going to understand why it was so important to get your father's approval, whatever it is you're trying to show them. And you don't, as a writer, want to spoil because one of the great enjoyments, one of the great pleasures of reading is discovery. The writer points at the thing. What's the rule, Jeff? Show, don't tell, right? Show, don't tell. Don't tell me the character's angry. Show it to me. Well, what a pleasure when the writer points towards angry and the reader on their own says, oh, I know what's going on here. That character's angry. Now the reader has decided the character's angry without ever being told they're angry, and the reader can own that. But there are going to be some people who just don't get it for whatever reason because of where they are. And you, as the writer, just like you don't want to explain a joke to everybody, like the more you explain it, the less funny it is. The same too with your writing. They'll reach a point. Say again, Jeff?
Give the punchline before the joke.
That's right. Once you explain a joke, it's not funny anymore. And the same goes for writing. If you have to explain too much, you lose the people who would have gotten it by you pointing at it. And so that's the fine line to our what's her name? Who's asked the question?
Uwe Poznanski.
Good Lord. Well, that's the answer. There is no firm answers to which to take or not, but understand there are always going to be people who can't at that time get what you're trying to show them. They just, for they won't, but the others who, and the others, the others, But others won't be able to get it, but you have to know within yourself when you think you can adjust it so they could understand it, so they could see what is so cool about it, so they could see what is so... What I don't tend to encourage in writing groups, or even from editors, are rewriting suggestions. Take this out, put this in. Start here. Bring in this kind of a character. I feel that unless you have a really great working relationship and you feel like you could almost finish each other's sentences, the job of the story or the poem is within the writer, and the reader can only know if it's not working for them. They can't really know what the writer is trying to say until the writer has said it. They can know whether they understand it or not. So I don't usually think it's a good idea to start making too many suggestions as to how exactly to fix something. Even when I'm editing things as an editor for Author Magazine, I tend to say, I don't understand, you know, I need an ending that has this kind of an effect. You need to show me why this is so important. You seem to be telling me it's important. I don't see it. You need to somehow show it to me. And I'll ask them a lot of questions. Why did you focus on this? Why did you focus on this? Why did you stop focusing on that? And I might make actual word changes because I am the editor and I can do that. But as a rule, it's mostly just questions, questions, questions. Clarify, clarify, clarify. Be more specific. Be more specific. Why did you say that? Show me more. Give me examples. Prove it. That's a long answer to a good question, though, I think.
But I'm telling you, Bill, you said the operative word, just clarify. Clarify what you're saying. I think an editor should be more distilling rather than sort of putting more potions into the mix. I think that's great. I feel the same way, because whose voice is really being spoken if you're taking all of this input and all these suggestions and basically rewriting? Whose words are you rewriting? Theirs or yours?
That's right.
That's a great point.
Yeah. So the thing is, editors are usually writers too, so they can get a little confusing. But a good editor just says, help me understand. Make it clearer. Because it makes sense, you know. I'm going to tell a quick story. Maybe this show will go a little longer. But I went to a writer's conference, and I do this fearless writing class like this, and I put forward a question just like we've done for this when people have to write down what they're going through, one of their challenges. And almost always somebody asks about time. I don't have enough time. And at this conference, this guy asked, what about time? I said, oh, I've got the answer. So I started talking about how you have to focus on how much you love your writing and how important it is to just focus on how much you love your writing. And just like how you find a story by focusing on how much you love the story, when you focus on how much you love your writing, you'll find the time in the same creative way. And I went on and on about focusing on the love of the writing and the love of the writing and the love of the writing. And the class was nodding and so on. And I finished my spiel. I kind of prepared it. And the guy said, well, thank you very much. That was really beautiful, and it didn't help me at all. And I said, give me your card. I'll write you back. So a week later, I was teaching a little workshop, an author's roundtable at East West Books there in Seattle, and these two women came in, and they had been at that class at the conference. And they said, oh, that was such a great class. Thank you. And I was very appreciative, and that was nice. And we stumbled on the subject of time and that guy. And I said, oh, he didn't get it. And they said to me, oh, we got what you were saying completely. It made perfect sense to us. And I thought, and what had happened is after that class, in the 2 weeks afterwards, I kept thinking about it and thinking about it. How come I couldn't help that guy? Why couldn't I help that guy? And that's when I came up with the question that every writer needs to ask themselves if writing is a waste of time. That's really the question that's on their mind when they say, how do I make the time? But it wasn't until that guy said you weren't able to help me that I spent 2 weeks thinking, why couldn't I help him, that I came up with that even more detailed question. And so by the time I met those two women and they had found my answer at that time helpful, I was glad I hadn't talked to them, because if I hadn't talked to that guy who didn't get it, I wouldn't have gone back and said, how could I be clearer? How could I be clearer? And so in that way, the guy who couldn't understand me actually helped me by making me think more deeply about this subject, even though there were people in the class who did get what I was trying to say.
To move on, Bill, I'd like to, if we can, move on next with Irene Riott's question, which is another wonderful segue from your great story. It's a little bit long, but I think it's worth saying the whole question. Once again, Irene Riott. And she asked, what I want to know is, how can we expand our limits as writers? How can I write about something I have observed but not quite experienced? For example, what if I wanted to write a story wherein the main character was a waitress, but I never worked as a waitress? Would it help if I interviewed someone with that kind of experience? Go to a restaurant and observe. Someone once suggested I change the character and write what I know. If I just wrote about my everyday life, writing for me would become boring. I want to be able to use my creativity, but still have to make my work credible. Any tips?
So she would like to be able to write about people who are having experiences different than her own.
Mm-hmm. Sort of put herself in people's hand and be able to write
herself
that
in other people's shoes. Well, you know, if it were, say, about being a waiter or a waitress, yes, certainly you could go interview people. I think that's one approach. That's one way to handle it. And you would probably begin to get a glimpse into that experience. But I think still your greatest tool is your imagination. And to say, what? And to be able to ask yourself, you know, because I wrote some fantasy novels for a bit. And of course, I've never ridden a horse and tried to slay a dragon and so on. I've never met a dragon. But I could use my imagination to picture something that huge. Just to picture, so when I was trying to picture standing under a dragon, the first thing as I imagined was something enormous, and I knew what that felt like. And what if that enormous thing were alive? And I could begin to picture that. And then I could give it a certain kind of intelligence. Then I imagined, what would a dragon smell like? And I could smell sulfur and the wet from the scales. And so I think I would begin to say, I would begin by trusting your imagination, but go slowly. Begin to ask yourself a lot of questions about, well, when would the waitress get up? When would she have to come home? What, every time you go, or even if you just go into a restaurant, just look at them. What do they seem to be going through?
Oh, I like
what
that.
What would it
Bill.
Be like to have that? Just begin to ask yourself a lot of questions, but ask detailed questions about that experience. I think that the imagination is a portal. Is a greater portal than perhaps she's giving herself credit for. Detailed questions about, just go through, what would that be like, and what would that be like, and what would that be like? I wanted to write about farm life, and I didn't know anything about farm life in the 1800s. So I had a friend who had been raised Amish, believe it or not. And so I said, just walk me through. So in that case, I actually interviewed someone. I said, walk me through a day. Like, what is that like? What do you do when you get up? And what do you worry about? And then I began to bring my own imagination into it. And actually, now that I think about it, a lot of the writers I know begin by doing some research just to get a basic sense for that, for the kind of person they're writing about. Even if they're writing about, say, an 18th century sailor, they can do research to get basic information about the life and times of that, but then their imagination comes in and brings that to life and starts using their own imagination to say, what would it like to be human and going through that experience? I think does that make sense to you, Jeff?
It really does. I mean, the research, I think, is essential if it's some period or era that we're not existing in, obviously, but asking the questions you would want your writer to be, your character to be asking themselves. And it's really, you know, we are a universal society people. We have different epochs and stages and eras and stuff, but we are just, people are people. Same sort of hates and desires and loves and fears.
And let me say this to the writer, because I have an intuition that there's something else afoot here, and I think it's this. You have the right to write about anyone you want. We are more, as Maya Angelou said, there's a beautiful piece going around on a commercial of all things. I forget what it's for. I think it might be for Xfinity, for all I know. But it's a beautiful poem she wrote back about 20 years ago, talking about how we look so different, but we are more alike than we are unalike. And I agree 100%. And there is a feeling sometimes that writers don't want to write outside of what they know in their day-to-day experience, but know that most of what you experience is universal. Most of what you actually experience, fear, desire, worrying about your own safety, worrying about your success, worrying about your attractiveness, thinking about what you do, thinking about your passions, thinking about the people you love, watching television, thinking about politics, reading the newspaper, whatever it is you do, most of what you feel is actually universal, and that there is far more that you have in common with everybody on the planet than you don't. Don't be too hypnotized by the externals, by the person's race or gender or political affiliation or their age or their occupation. Understand first they're human and you're human, and that means you have 95% in common. The rest is surface stuff. It really is. And I think if you can come at it from that, then you'll be okay.
That's great.
I really do.
Right again, because yeah. We are, no matter what our stage in life, the life process, our age, our background, our education, we are still essentially all human beings.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And that is what you're really writing about. You're not really writing about waitresses. You're writing about a human who's a waitress. You're not writing about the President of the United States. You're writing about a person who's the President of the United States. Now, there are some unique challenges to being the president, but still they're a person, and the personhood is the more important part than the external details. And so, yeah, you might want to get those, but don't be intimidated by the external details. They're nothing compared to the humanity that is living within those details, and that you know through your own experience. That you can know through your own experience.
Which, again, is that it's universal.
Absolutely.
As people, we all have the same feelings.
Well, since we got one crank, let's do one more question. We'll let the show go just a little bit longer today.
Well, this is sort of back to the nuts and bolts of writing, and I know we all matter, again, our experience level and how much we publish. I think we still think this. It's from Amanda Allen's. Great question, Amanda. Thank you. I would have the writing happily ever day experience if I had the discipline / created the space to sit down and do a little work. I have chosen to sit down and make a little progress on my project. I'm much happier than if I had sat down and killed a bunch of zombies with plant weapons after an hour. That's a game, by the way.
Okay. And so what's her question?
She's just basically saying, what's the merit behind it? What you said earlier, which I guess is a nice segue now.
She says, I like writing.
Why am I doing writing.
I know it's better than if I sit down and kill zombies, but I sometimes kill plant zombies instead of writing. Am I getting the gist of her? So why don't I just write more often?
Mm-hmm.
And why am I killing plant zombies instead of writing? Well, I'll tell you, Amanda, why you are killing plant zombies instead of writing. When you know you love to write, and you know that killing plant zombies won't lead to anything more but being better at killing imaginary plant zombies, whereas you believe it is possible, the writing might lead to something else, to other stories, to publication, to greater experiences. So why wouldn't you just pursue it? What's with this? Why let yourself play this game instead of write? Well, the answer is this. Writing is the search for the effortless word. So how do you know you've got the right word? Because it feels the best, right, Jeff? The right word doesn't feel forced. It feels effortless, right? The right lover is the effortless lover to be with, not the one you got to make yourself be with, not the one you got to contort yourself to be with. No, the one you look forward to being with. How do you know if you got the right job? It's the most effortless job. Life is not supposed to be effortful. The effort we experience, the resistance we experience, is simply guidance to tell us that we need to tack our course. You know, so you put the word down, it's no good. Put another word, nah, that hurt, that feels forced, that's the effortless path. Oh, now I found the path for that story. That's how we know we're headed in the right direction. There's no other means. But sometimes when we're writing, there's tremendous resistance. We are sitting down, and instead of asking ourselves, how could I tell the story, we ask ourselves, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are that you can write a book that everybody wants to read? Or we might sit down and say, okay, this time I've got to do a really good job and I've got to get it perfect. Or you might sit down and think, is this a waste of time? And those kinds of questions create tremendous resistance. And everything in our being is built to avoid that kind of effort and resistance. We want the effortless path, but we look at writing and we think, I know I like it, but some days it's so damn hard, and I don't know if I can get there. But I know if I play video games, that doesn't require any effort whatsoever. It is an easy, effortless, resistance-less experience. I don't have to make any big decisions. I don't have to figure anything out. And even if I lose, it doesn't matter. And so it's a perfectly natural solution to say it's easier to do that, and I want an effortless choice. So it's not a bad decision to make to go play killing plant zombies. You're simply wanting to feel good. But just know that while it's true the plant killing zombies and playing video games doesn't carry much threat of the suffering that writing can, the suffering you feel, the resistance and discomfort you feel while writing is not punishment or proof that you're not good enough, but guidance toward the effortless path that you know is there and that you already have experience or you wouldn't be doing it at all. The resistance you're afraid of is just guidance. And if you, Amanda, can look upon writing as a search for that effortless path, that effortless word, just one word, that effortless scene, that effortless sentence, and that's how you know it's good. You know you got the right one because it feels right, because it feels easier, because it feels effortless. If you can remember that that's all it is, it's not there to roll the die and see if this time it's going to suck and maybe unlike yesterday was good, but today it'll suck. I don't know. Who knows what's going to happen? No. If you look upon it as a practice of finding the effortless path for the story, essay, poem, then perhaps in your mind, the experience of writing will begin to seem friendlier and will begin to seem almost as effortless in your imagination as playing that game where you know you can just drop the resistance and just tune out. That's why you're doing it, not because you're lazy and not because there's no point to writing, but because you want to feel good. You want to feel good, Amanda. That's all you're on this planet to do. And you will never feel so good as when you're creating the thing you want to create. Then you feel on purpose. Then you've summoned all your energy and all your attention and all your creative drive, and you can't feel any better than that. You can't feel more Amanda than when you're making what Amanda wants to make. So then you feel great, but you often have to go through a little resistance to find that path that truly is Amanda, because perhaps you spent time trying to be someone slightly different, Amanda, like wearing size 10 and a half when you should be wearing 11s, because you think that's what people want, and you try to walk around in those shoes that aren't quite right for you, and it's okay at first, but then it hurts and it hurts and it hurts, and you get used to it. Writing has to be the perfect fit. It has to feel perfect, and you have to get to write well, to write what you're meant to write. You have to get used to feeling good. You have to accept that feeling good is the way you're supposed to feel, and most of us don't do that. Most of us think we're supposed to endure a certain amount of suffering. You're not. You're not. You're not. You're not. So I hope that helps, Amanda. You can do it. The search for the effortless path.
That was wonderful, Bill. I couldn't have said it better myself on my best day. That was wonderful. Exactly. And what does that bring to you? It brings love.
That's
right. The opposite of fear. It brings
love. That's right.
You're in love with your writing.
And I would say,
so you're going to go there as you know your lover so well. And you're right. And I love you said the shoes. I was thinking of the analogy of that really comfy chair you've been sitting in for a while. It may have a spring in it or so that's poking you, but you found the right comfortable spot.
That's right. That's right.
Well, Bill, where can people get in touch with you? I know you said it early in the show.
Well, I'll say it again.
With you,
WilliamKnauer.com.
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. What'd you say, Jeff?
To be able to go attend one of your lectures in the Northwest.
Yeah. WilliamKnauer.com has all the information, particularly if you want to contact me. I'm going to be doing some things in the fall. I'll talk about it maybe the next. We're going to be doing this again next week. So WilliamKnauer.com, there's a fearless writing link there, big fearless writing link. Go there, and that gives information about when I talk to individuals. I love to work with individuals. And also writing groups. If you have a little writing group, I can Skype in, or if you're in my neck of the woods, I can come visit and have a little class for your writing group. Or I can come talk to your writing organization. That's also an option. And it's all there under WilliamKnauer.com, also a link to buy Write Within Yourself if you want a little dose of something to keep by your bedside every night, a little reminder why creativity is always worth it. If you want, that sounds like just the thing you'd like to have, as I said, by your bedside, click on the link for Write Within Yourself, pick up a copy. will be at your door in no time. And so we're going to do this again next week, Jeff. If people have any questions, they can post them on, you can send them to me at bill@authormagazine.org. You can post them on Facebook. You can friend me on Facebook, William Knauer. Or where else are they posting the questions, Jeff?
Well, they can send them to you at your email. They can post them in a message to me on my Facebook page, R.J. Jeffries.
R.J. Jeffries. Is it, what is your Facebook page? Can you just remind our listeners?
R.J. Jeffries, author.
R.J. Jeffries, author. Or you can tweet it to me at WDBK. W-D as in dog, B as in Bob, K. That's my Twitter handle. You can tweet me a question if you want, and I will. Oh, or, ladies and gentlemen, call in. Hopefully you're not a prank caller, but if you call in at 661-449-9357, you will go to the top of the list. How about that? So same time next week, Tuesday, 2 p.m. Of course, this show will be archived. Well, Jeff, thank you once again. You've been priceless.
Seeing as most mutual, Bill, thank you again for the opportunity. Again, another wonderful show, and thank you to everyone for calling for writing your questions. Please keep them coming. We want to keep the series going. And we couldn't do without you, and I couldn't do without you,
no,
Bill.
I couldn't do without you as well, Jeff. All right, Jeff, we'll see you next week.
Looking forward to it, my friend. Have a wonderful week ahead.
You too. And everybody, go write what you love. Find the effortless path. That's the right one. I know it's hard to believe, but it is. I got to keep reminding.